Hello and welcome to the Jim Ruff Show. Today we have a guest host. His name is Greg Saville, and you might recognize Greg because he was the guest a few weeks ago. And Greg is a crime prevention specialist, consultant, and an adjunct faculty member at the University of New Haven. Mm-hmm. And so last time we talked about Greg's work in neighborhoods and helping them get involved in community policing. And this time, Greg's going to interview me about the Wisdom Council and how that might apply to some of the work that he does. Welcome, Greg.
Thanks for inviting me back, Jim.
Great.
Good to see you again. Yeah. So in our discussions about your work, when we talked last time about crime prevention and the kinds of neighborhood social development that we're doing to turn neighborhoods back from the brink, we thought today we would talk about bringing neighbors back from the brink in terms of sense of empowerment, in terms of representativeness and having a say. And I thought we would get into the business of what wisdom councils are, because I'm not really clear on what wisdom councils are. How do you define them?
Well, what a wisdom council is it's a mechanism that allows a whole neighborhood to have one conversation and for it to be a creative conversation and for people to actually address issues and to reach unanimous sense of what to do about those issues.
So why can't people do that now? Why don't they normally do that just as part of social activities or regular events? Why don't they do it now?
Well, they do a little bit. I mean, people talk to one another and they might have a town hall meeting and things like that. But the town hall meeting, let's say if it was on a particular topic, a town hall meeting would really bring all the people that are interested in that issue, and you might get 200 people saying, yeah, we want parks, but it really doesn't represent the whole community, and it's not really a creative conversation. It's really sort of a, kind of a demonstration of power. Or if you set up a dialogue meeting, you, again, only get the self-selected few that come, and often you'd get kind of general statements about there isn't a sense of all of us. The neat thing about the Wisdom Council is it genuinely offers the prospect of everyone. Certainly, symbolically, it does that, but even in actuality, there's a close proximity to that, and it shifts the nature of the conversation from the usual back and forth discussion to what I call a choice-creating conversation. So it's everybody trying to figure out what's best for everybody.
Is that the creative conversation part of the dialogue?
Yeah, it's I call it choice creating because, you know, mostly we think in terms of decision making, which is kind of a head concept, a judging of this option versus that option, and it's kind of you make the decision, whereas in the choice creating, it's really all of us trying to sort of feel out the choices. A choice is something that your whole body kind of makes rather than just your head, and you create it. It's something where you end up with something that everybody in the room realizes this is obvious. Of course we should do this, or of course that's what the situation is.
So then this Wisdom Council, it's essentially a meeting of people in the neighborhood.
Well, it's a conversation of everybody in the neighborhood. Now, the way you get that conversation is you randomly select, say, 3 times a year, you randomly select different groups of, say, 12 people. And those random selections happen, and then those people meet for like 2 half days or longer, and they pick the issue, and they come up with unanimous choices, unanimous positions that everybody feels. So you're getting people from all walks of life, all different parts of society, of the neighborhood, and they come up with a unanimous perspective and say, hey, we ought to do this, or whatever it might be. Here's the problem we came up with, no parks, whatever, and here's some ways that the parks could be made, and we could do it in this way and that way, and there ought to be a light stand on this corner, and we ought to have a bench here and pocket park there and that kind of thing. They could design an actual system, and then they propose it to the whole neighborhood, and hopefully there's some organization happening in the background that really makes the whole neighborhood hear this message and talk about it.
I want to pursue that a bit further.
Yeah.
Before, though, when I first heard the term wisdom counselor, it reminded me very much of what I've heard in Native communities and indigenous Aboriginal peoples communities, because they have wisdom councils also. But those tend to be elders who
right.
help, you know, people with hard decisions.
Right.
Is this similar to that?
Well, it's not the elders, it's everybody. But to me, the Native American process is they were aware of this quality of thinking that I call choice creating. And they tried to establish it. And they did things like smoke a peace pipe
right.
or get together in a kiva or,
right.
you know, they did, where they all went on a vision quest or whatever. Somehow they structured things to try and encourage that high quality of thinking. In our system, we didn't do that. We set up an adversarial debate and where everybody, fights with one another, and we call that, how we make our collective decisions.
The interesting thing that I find about this is that in the work I do in criminology and crime prevention, there is a new movement that has come in the corrections and prison area called restorative justice, or RJ. And restorative justice is very much about bringing neighbors together to deal with crime or people have been victimized.
Yes.
By working with the victim family and the victim and the offender and the offender family and bringing people together in common purpose in a very much a similar sort of format.
It is. What they're doing in that case is they're trying to bring the whole unit together that was a part of this process.
Mm-hmm.
And so everybody can actually talk. And that's kind of what this neighborhood, the Wisdom Council, does. Is it brings the whole neighborhood together.
Now,
only it's not 10 people or 7 people. It's 2,000 people or whatever, however many are in the neighborhood.
Although, now, you had originally envisioned, at least in your book, your earlier book, that you talked about this being a national process.
Yes.
How is it different now with neighborhoods?
Well, it's the same process. I thought when I wrote the book that I would tell people about this concept and they'd all slap their heads and said, "My God, you did it, Jim. You figured out how to save the world.
Right.
Now why don't we do that?" Of course, nobody responded that way. And so now, but there's been a tremendous advance in that we now know that we can just start doing it. And we can do it at the smaller level. And give people the idea, give them a sense of it.
Okay, now the idea to do what? What do wisdom councils actually accomplish?
Well, to me, what they actually accomplish happens on lots of different levels. At one level, you could come up with actions, specific actions, that when they say they want a pocket park in such and such area, the pocket park actually happens.
Mm-hmm.
Because they then represent all the citizens and they can just start making it, or they can go to the city council or make and get funding, or they can get donations or whatever. They can just, you've got an empowered group of people making that happen. But at a deeper level, there's a number of deeper levels. One other deeper level is it brings into play this process of thinking that has been so long absent that in our collective decision making. So that we now are making collectively intelligent decisions instead of collectively stupid decisions, which is what we've got arranged. So if you set up an adversarial process where special interests do battle, you're going to get decisions that are collectively stupid. You're going to trash the planet. You're going to have a food industry that's really making everybody obese. You're going to have a defense industry that actually is creating wars. You're going to do dumb things. So even though you intend to be doing good things, and all the people involved are trying to do good things.
I guess that's my next question, or answers my next question, which was, we have already town councils. We have already groups in the community, City Hall, for example, who do make decisions, and they do help try to solve problems, and they're elected to do that.
Yes.
So why can't they be the people who do that?
Well, this doesn't take away from that. Those groups still exist. They're still the operational authorities. The difference is that they don't have a way to talk in this choice-creating way. They don't have their conversation is, again, at least in our city council, an adversarial battling kind of process, and if they do come up with something unanimously, it's a very weak compromise kind of thing. They're not. When the Wisdom Council meets, you get a random selection of people, and they come up with the kind of leap forward that we would imagine from people. In other words, when we did it in Pleasantville, New York, the groups came back with, hey, we ought to move the train station out of town, and we ought to build a parking garage there, and here's how to fund it, and we ought to have this abandoned warehouse ought to be turned into a youth center, and there was an architect who was watching the process, who just was so excited by this and ran off to try and make it to happen by himself. So, and they presented to the city council, and the city council kind of, they aren't thinking at that level. They're thinking at the level of, okay, how do we get funding for this little minuscule thing so that we can meet the mandate from the state? I mean, now you have this proposal, this strategic proposal that actually has a political will behind it, that the city council can then go, yeah, I'm here in place to help make that happen. That's why I want to be on the city council, to make those big projects do.
So when Jerry Maguire says, show me the money in this process is the choice creation magic.
Well, there's choice creating magic, that's right. The quality of thinking that we do as a community is critical, and how we do that. Now, when I said this is a deep level change, the other deep level aspect of this is that it really puts in authority the neighbors. In other words, if I as an individual neighbor really can't, I don't have much power. I can go down and demonstrate for something, but in the end, it's a vote between yes or no, and the vote doesn't really satisfy my needs. If there's a way that I can really participate in coming up with what's really needed in this community, what we really want, and to restructure our entire system, then I'm start to get really excited. And for instance, for your community policing work, I mean, that requires an ongoingness. I mean, you can come in and start it, but then you leave and they get a new mayor and a new city council and people move in and out of the county. But if you have a client that is all of the people in the neighborhood together saying, hey, this community policing is the way to go, and this is consistent with our new system of management of how citizens manage their own community, well, now you've got a way to keep it ongoing.
Well, actually, you've just hit on the head one of the biggest crises in the community policing movement and the crime prevention movement in neighborhoods, which is sustaining the momentum.
Yeah.
Very many cities across this nation can rarely keep a large city police chief for more than 3 to 5 years, which means there's no transferability or way to sustain that energy. In our crime prevention work, one of the key elements we try to build in a community is what we call kinetic change. Kinetic being energy that's stored in potential but not realized. And so what we try to do is tap into the resources in the community, what's called the social capital,
right,
which is already there. But the trick has been, how do you bring that forward? How do you empower people in a neighborhood, let's say, you know, sprawling suburbs, which we have all across the country, where people really, frankly, don't care that much. They come home from work, they're tired, they don't want to get involved in community life, and frankly, they elect people and representatives to do that for them. Why
right.
would they then leave their home at night and get engaged?
See, what happens here is that they get a call. First of all, they get a letter saying they've been randomly selected, and then they get a call and saying, hey, look, you've been randomly selected. You're one of 12 people of the 2,000 people in the area, and we need you to show up on this weekend because we'll call them again, and we'll beg them, and we'll do whatever we can to get them to actually show up.
Like jury duty.
It's more than jury duty. We go, there's no filter here. You were selected. You are one of the 12. So we're going to do our damnedest, get you a babysitter, whatever it takes to get you there to come. We want you there.
Mm-hmm.
Because you... if we get those first 12, which we've never really gotten, but if we get those first 12, we've really got a pure random selection. Mm-hmm. And then the facilitator, those group turn and they have a 2 days, like a weekend. They give up a weekend. Now, if the city council and the mayor and everything says this is a great program, then you call them and they know about it ahead of time, then they really want to come. If it's just a community group saying, hey, you've been randomly selected, then you have to really struggle to get them there. But the dynamic facilitation process and the choice-creating process is fun. People love it. They've given up their weekend. They've given up their watching their favorite football team on TV. They show up, and every time, to a person almost, the group says, hey, this was great. If you ever get selected, come. And so that's been really reassuring. So the group essentially that gets selected says, charter's kind of the next one. Mm-hmm. Now, when this group speaks, that's been the struggle. How do we get the rest of the world to come to hear their talk?
Well, that's where I think the key here is, because if we can trigger that kind of interest and that kind of energy in a neighborhood to work on crime problems, for example, that's been the stumbling block for programs in the past. And that's where we use this kinetic approach to building a neighborhood, you know, empowerment, neighborhood interest. That's where it really works the best. And if we could somehow blend the sort of choice creation, dynamic facilitation, wisdom council approach with what we're doing in terms of prevention, I think we could have a model that could have national appeal.
I think it's a slam dunk.
So tell me something. How do you, when you say randomly selected, one of the areas that curse strikes to me on this is what I found with some communities that are often dysfunctional with,
right,
you know, racism issues or gang issues, is that a lot of the popular sentiment in those communities, frankly, isn't that ethical. And if you select 12 of those people and sit them down at a table, where is your moral compass during the session that they won't come up with some neo-Nazi recommendation?
Yeah. Well, first of all, just let me say that it's really unlikely that you get that kind of group. We've done it a number of times, and you always get like a group out of central casting. I mean, it's really motley. But even if you did get this group, the process of talking that is guaranteed in this because of the dynamic facilitation is a creative process. People, I mean, even if they have a racist kind of perspective in general, they tend to not say it that way. The people in the creative choice creating zone are really trying to find something that's best for everybody.
So the facilitator is the moral compass for the group.
Well, the process is. It's like you take people out of their, like the wisdom, it's like the Native Americans did when they brought people down into the kiva and you had this ceremony beforehand and you pass the peace pipe or whatever. Then when they speak with a different tone. It's not this hate-filled whatever tone. It's a different tone. And it's kind of like everybody's kind of wanting to serve what's best for everybody. And that tone is the missing ingredient in our self-governance process, and that tone is what this brings. Now, having said that too, but even if this group, there's another fail-safe, even if this group did say something like that, they don't have any power. They're just gone, and now the only power that group has is to the extent that everybody else says yes. So if you're in the audience and you don't say yes, that voice has no power.
Although, you know, one of my backgrounds is urban planning, and I do urban planning work with development and cities and so forth, and my experience with the urban planning process is that there is a natural tendency to revert back to the inertia of traditional politics. Once the group disbands, you know, the traditional political groups and factions take over and it's business as usual.
Yeah.
How do you sustain it past
well,
that?
Well, great question. The Wisdom Council is, by its definition, ongoing. In other words, it happens every 4 months. So there is an ongoingness we have 12 principles, and one of the principles is it's ongoing. Now, we've done exactly that. We've done trials in a community in the Rogue Valley, for instance.
What happened?
Well, we did one session. It was exhilarating. Everybody said, this is great. But we were from kind of the outside. We don't have energy for that place. They had a lot of energy that came, and it turned into a political energy and a political group, and it often went off and kept meeting, but more in a one-sided kind of thing.
Adversarial.
Yeah, trying to get things through the city council. So they didn't understand that the energy that was created was a different kind than the normal political energy because we didn't have that sustaining presence. So it requires a sustaining presence.
So you learned from that?
Well, we knew it anyway, I think, but yeah, we learned a lot from that.
What happened in St. Helens?
Well, we haven't done it yet. St. Helens, Oregon, we're planning to do a year-long Wisdom Council starting hopefully by the end of March, and where I'm going to do a training in dynamic facilitation for a large group of people, and that group is going to be given a scholarship to come by a nonprofit donation, and then that group will become the conveners who choose to continue over time and keep a wisdom council going.
So that's an exciting opportunity to move the idea further ahead. Have you tried it in Port Moody?
No, Port Moody. I don't know where that is.
Sorry, Port Townsend.
Port Townsend.
Former residence. Port Townsend.
Well, I've done some experiments in town, and of course I've done a lot of talking in town. But one of the experiments was right here on Port Townsend TV. My wife and I, selected eight people. Actually, Alan Frank, who was on the city council at the time, got excited about this and talked to the city council and said, hey, would you support an experiment on PTTV? And the city council said yes, and then Jim would come and talk to us about it afterwards, and would you support that? And they said yes. Great. So we randomly selected eight people to come on camera here. It's about all the studio could handle.
Right.
And they actually came, which was hard. I mean, it was like 8 out of 80, I think. But, and some people, it was on a Friday night, so one woman that we called had a basketball game for her daughter. That was too much to give up and things like that. But they came, and they had a conversation. They picked a topic, and the topic was about box stores coming to town. Mm-hmm. And they reached what I thought was a wise consensus in 2 hours. It was kind of pushing it, but they, I can't remember exactly, but we did it. It's all on video, and you can get it out of the library. And it was a successful experiment. Mm-hmm. And Alan Frank was in the studio, and he was exhilarated. Mm-hmm. And then when it came time to talk to the city council about it, it was very interesting. It was like they held up crosses and started backing up.
Why?
I mean... It was yelled at one point that we are the wisdom council.
The city council is.
One person said that,
I see.
So it was and of course I have learned a lot since then, but basically it was a concept that's really has a threatening quality to it at its core because it, and we didn't talk about this, but it really is about changing the system. It really is about democracy. How would it be if all of us were really in charge and it wasn't these official bodies, and it wasn't this official piece of paper, and it was really just all of us visiting, talking, and that was the essential component of the authority.
I guess a counter argument would be, why would 12 people picked randomly out of the community represent any more of a democratic perspective than elected members?
Well, see, elected members are representative. I mean, that's a different thing. They're not, in a sense, they're not real people. I mean, if you're a representative of something, you are not you, you're representing something. So you aren't quite you anymore. There's a microcosm. Wisdom Council is a microcosm process. So you randomly select people, and you get a bunch of individual people talking for themselves only. But they reach unanimity. Mm-hmm. So here's a unanimous voice of randomly selected people, just that in itself is a symbol of the voice of the people. And when they speak, it's hard to find somebody who disagrees. Everybody kind of says, yeah. Not quite everybody, but and the person who doesn't say that, you want to hear what they have to say. So you're listening to these disparate voices.
On what topic or on any topic?
They pick the topic. You randomly select these people, they pick the top. So if you're randomly selected, the facilitator stands up and says, what are some of the things you might like to talk about here today? And you would say, community policing ought to be the program of how this community works.
Can that be selected prior to the Wisdom Council being established?
Well, no. But the city council could say, we would love it if you talked about this. We need answers from the community. We spend $20,000 a year doing surveys. You could save us a lot of money if the community would address this topic.
That's what occurs to me, is that we have problems in neighborhoods with certain types of crime, and that is exactly the kind of perspective we would look for.
Yes, yes. So you would be a voice asking this but once the Wisdom Council is assembled, it would be up to them, because they're the ultimate authority, of what topics they choose. And they would come discuss it for a while, they wouldn't discuss it. They'd do this choice-creating process, and then they would reach unanimous positions that they're all excited about, present it to the community, and then generally the community would hear maybe in churches and different ways, and they would respond in the web, and everybody could kind of see the extent to which everybody agrees.
It sounds like a neighborhood focus group.
Well, a focus group is different. A focus group is assigned topic. Mm-hmm. And it's assigned because I am really in charge here and I want to know how the neighborhood feels.
Right.
But I'm in charge.
Right.
This is the opposite. This is where the focus group is in charge telling the people in authority what to do. Mm-hmm. It flips the whole system.
And you say 12 people. Does that number come from any place? Or?
Well, it just comes now more from experience. You don't need that many people. It's really the process of thinking that makes the key difference. And what we discovered over time is that people trust them. As soon as they see the quality of talking that's happening, and they don't need to have all these representatives up there. It's an exciting thing to be a part of.
I can see where it'd be a threat.
Well, the threat part is coming. I mean, there is no identifiable threat. I mean, nobody has ever actually pointed to something and said, here's what I'm worried about. And you know, that you could point it. But it is a total systems change in how we think. It's about governance. It's a total different way to run governance. And so it affects me and how I think. It affects how the schools operate. It affects you know, who would get elected and why we would run for office and what my job would look like and what the corporate money would. It affects everything. So we need to stop.
Well, Jim, you know what Gandhi said about this kind of change? He said, first they ignore you, then they fight you, then they laugh at you, then you win.
Then you win.
So maybe
it's moving. There's progress.
Are they laughing at you or fighting you?
Hey, thanks a lot, Greg. This is Greg Saville.